HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. We begin in Florida, where hundreds of people honored three black people shot to death in a racist attack. Correspondent Wendy Gillette reports.
Families that have lost someone.
A city in mourning. Residents of Jacksonville came together for a prayer vigil after police say a white man gunned down three black people at a Dollar General store Saturday.
No more division. No more hate.
We are going to do what we need to do to make sure that evil does not triumph in the state of Florida.
Authorities say the gunman targeted two shoppers and a store employee because of their race.
Governor DeSantis there booed by the crowd. A massive storm churning near the coast of Cuba is expected to develop into something even bigger over the eastern Gulf of Mexico. WTSP meteorologist Bobby Deskins is tracking Tropical Storm Idalia.
Tuesday afternoon into the evening hours, now forecast to be a 110 mile per hour category 2 hurricane. 111 is cat 3, major hurricane. And the Hurricane Center says that's not out of the question.
The west coast of Florida and the panhandle could get slammed with storm surge, hurricane force winds, and flash flooding. Franklin is expected to become a major hurricane today as it approaches Bermuda. Could create life-threatening rip currents along the U.S. East Coast. The Pentagon is trying to figure out what caused a U.S. military aircraft to crash in northern Australia, killing three Marines. Scott Maiman reports from Canberra.
The Osprey came down at the Tiwi Islands, just north of Darwin. It's so remote, recovery efforts have been difficult, a headache for investigators to access.
The sacrifice of these personnel is felt deeply across the defence community.
Australia's Defence Minister Richard Marles, analyst Glenn Colomites, says the Osprey has recently had a couple of incidents.
They'll need to be looking at those systemic issues as well in the course of this investigation.
Lawyers for Mark Meadows will be in court in Atlanta today asking for a change of venue in the election interference case. Correspondent Scott McFarland.
The argument he's making is that these crimes for which he's been accused occurred when he was serving as a U.S. president's chief of staff, and that this is a federal jurisdiction thing. The prosecutor has responded, we're talking about crimes that you have alleged to commit when you were serving as a campaign surrogate.
Simone Biles makes history.
It doesn't matter. On podium, without training that many months, people in the audience, the camera clicking sounds, she is tough.
She won a record 8th national all-around title at the U.S. Gymnastics Championships on NBC Sports. S&P futures up 7. This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute.
Weekdays from 4 until 6
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody, along with Mr. Aaron Zommers, the fantastic Mr. Aaron Zommers at that. It is Friday, August 25th, TGIF. Thank goodness it's Friday. Been a long week here at Civic Media. Happy to get there. Hopefully you are going to have a great weekend as well. Hour number two, going to be chock full at the bottom of the hour. Keegan Kelly, comedy beat writer at Cracked.com. I've written some great stories, including from Caddyshack. Apparently the guy that one of the characters is based on, maybe the Bill Murray character, is still alive, and he's still ticked off at this movie, apparently.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
And Keegan Kelly wrote a piece about this, and so we're going to ask Keegan at the bottom of the hour that and many other stories as well. What's it like to be a comedy writer? We'll talk to them at the bottom of the hour at 2:30. But right now, we are pleased to have our news director here at Civic Media in the studio. Terry, we haven't been on the air together since election night, probably.
You're probably right. And this is my first time on your show, I believe.
Well, I think he came on briefly a couple of times during, yeah, right, during the early morning, the morning show we had at the old location on University Avenue. But we've both been busy.
We have been very busy. And that's a good thing. And things are going to get even busier.
You're adding all kinds of staff. And the cool thing is, for people that don't know, we're going to have people on the ground in places like Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, Green Bay, Racine, Waukesha, and of course you're here in Madison. I mean, this is a true statewide news outlet.
You know, it's been building so quickly, and that's the exciting thing. And we're putting our reporters and anchors out all over the state. There are going to be more tweaks and additions in the weeks and months to come, and it's all very exciting. And Todd, I can only speak for myself, but I think you feel the same way. As part of what drew me here was the excitement of doing new things and trying new things.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It's fantastic to be part of this kind of growing new company. Been here just over a year now. One of the things that you were watching yesterday, Terry, over the last couple of days, is this story that came out of kind of Wausau and the Capitol both. Explain to folks what this was and where we're at on what appeared to be, keyword appeared by some at least, as the Legislative Technology Bureau blocking a independent state newspaper.
Right. So what they're, for a little background, the Wausau Pilot and Review has been involved in a legal battle with a state lawmaker for some time, even since before he was a state lawmaker. This was back when he was a private citizen and this whole thing got initiated. The Pilot and Review did a story about this individual who allegedly said a slur during a meeting. He denies it, sued for defamation, and the Wausau Pilot and Review right now, they have a GoFundMe type fundraising campaign going to pay their legal bills. And that gets to a whole other issue of SLAPP lawsuits, two P's in SLAPP, S-L-A-P-P, stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. Wow. And they're nuisance lawsuits, the harassment lawsuits, and I'm not speaking directly to this particular case, but in general, the issue of SLAPP lawsuits is when you sue a small news organization with a shoestring budget with the intent of bankrupting them to the point where, you know, they can no longer criticize you.
Right.
And to, you just put, to put them out of business.
Right. Just to get rid of them. And, right. And this lawmaker who eventually got elected or, is a Republican and allegedly said a racial slur against gay people. And correct me if I'm wrong, there was at least three or four people that under oath witnessed that they saw this or heard this at the time.
And a judge threw out an initial legal action. I believe this is all about a second bit of legal action. But again, the allegation is that this is a slap lawsuit, that it's not really to address a legitimate grievance, but to, you know, harass and bankrupt critics.
So how in the world does a lawsuit in Wisconsin over a small town or a small paper in a medium-sized town, how does that relate to the state capitol?
Well, this very same website, apparently for this news organization's website, was blocked for a time yesterday on state legislatures' computers. If you work in an office, if you are an aide to any lawmaker, a Republican or Democrat, that website was blocked for a time. Now, a lot of websites are blocked in the Capitol, largely to protect against cybersecurity threats. You know, if there is a website that's showing signs of, you know, putting out malware, that sorts of things, you know, the IT folks at the Capitol will shut that down. What happened was, is that for a time, the Wausau Pilot and Review's website was blocked from state Capitol staff reviews. It came to our attention. State Senator Kelda Royce's office put out a tweet about this. Do we still call them tweets, by the way?
I do. I'm not you're calling it X's. No, no. I refuse. I'm still calling it tweets.
Okay. So they put out a picture of a computer saying that this website has been blocked. And, you know, that piqued my interest because the Pilot and Review has been in the news. And so I followed up all with the senator's office and with the technology bureau at the Capitol, and the technology bureau gave me the same email that they put out to all the staff at the Capitol. And essentially, what they were saying, and I'm trying to bring this up on my computer. Fine. Forgive me. Can I just read the?
Yeah, we got about 20 seconds left here.
All right.
So we'll hold it. We're going to come back and talk more with Terry Bell, news director here at Civic Media. What's the deal? I used to work in the building up there a block away. I was a legislative staffer. We can talk more about that. Terry Bell will give us the unbiased and unvarnished truth on it when we come back as well. Don't go anywhere. Todd Allball, Terry Bell, Aaron Zommers. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny today with a high around 82, slight chance of an afternoon storm. Scattered storms tonight, partly cloudy, low near 60. Sunshine for tomorrow and a high near 77. Clear skies, 53 on Tuesday night. Sunny 79 for Wednesday.
It's 57 at our studios.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
The Tyler Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 15 now past the hour of 2 o'clock. Nicely done, Mr. Zomertz. What do you dial up there?
Oops, I did it again by Britney Spears. Oops, Britney. I blocked somebody who I have legal action against. I'm not that innocent is another Oops. Lyric in the song.
Oops. We are talking with Terry Bell, news director here at Civic Media. Done a great job over the last 40 hours of covering this story. Started the Wausau Pilot Review, a small independent newspaper in central Wisconsin, covering this this incident that happened before this guy. Who's the legislator? I forget.
Tomczyk.
Tomczyk, yeah.
Corey Tomczyk.
Yeah. Corey Tomczyk ran for assembly, ended up getting elected as a Republican, and allegedly, before he got elected, he was in a public meeting and used a slur against gay people. And the Wausau Pilot Review reported this. And the guy, they get sued and said, you know, no, I never said this, even though there are three or four people that under oath said, yeah, I heard him say it too. And so now there's, as Terry said, there's a slap lawsuit. It's called SLAPP. Basically trying to put this small newspaper out of business. And so now, Terry, get us to the point where this week in the state capitol, according to State Senator Kelda Royce, this paper, the Wausau Pilot Review, was, you couldn't get to it if you were in a state computer.
No, that's the thing. And that's what caught my eye, is because, you know, the Pilot Review has been in the news, and this tweet goes out from the Royce office. And so I was like, well, let me try to get to the bottom of this as best I can. So I reached out to the senator's office. I reached out to the LTSB for comments. And this is what the LTB said. And they forwarded me a copy of the same memo they put out to everybody.
And for people that might not be as political people like you and I are political animals, LTSB is the Legislative Technology Bureau. This is the office, basically, that runs all technology and computers for the legislature, not the entire Capitol, right. For the legislature.
Right. And so they're the state legislature's IT department.
Correct.
Pretty much.
Well, much more succinct.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So anyway, this is what they had to say. This is what they shared with me. LTSB uses sophisticated cybersecurity technologies to protect the Wisconsin legislature. This includes firewall technology that relies on a third-party website categorization service. Website categories that are widely considered malicious, like phishing or malware, are blocked by the firewall. These technologies are very good, but they're not perfect. Every once in a while, a website is miscategorized. When LTSB learns that a particular website has been blocked, we inspect it to see if the categorization seems to be accurate. If we believe the categorization was inaccurate, we can request that the third party reevaluate the website category. Earlier this week, the website for the Wausau Pilot and Review was classified as phishing by the website categorization service. Upon a manual review of the website, LTSB assessed that this categorization was in error and reached out to our provider to request reclassification. As a result, the provider reclassified the website as news, and the website is now accessible inside the legislature once again. And that's what they put out to all of the legislative offices, that's what they shared with me. So it's once, you know, we have this thing that happened. We have the LTSB's explanation. And the staffers that I spoke with in the Capitol seemed a little less, they were more skeptical.
And to put it down there, as Judge Weissman down in Tennessee once said, to put it down there where the chickens can get at it, what that basically said in the LTSB memo to you or the release was, they're claiming that it just so happened, of all the websites in the world, of all the things that could be blocked by our technology, it just so happened that the Wausau Pilot and Review, the little tiny independent newspaper in Wausau, happened to trigger that technology, and it accidentally got blocked.
Well, you know, there are those that say there is no such thing as a coincidence. And it's also within the realm of possibility that this did happen the way that the memo states it did.
And there's also a possibility that the Wagner leader in Russia, Prigozhin, accidentally got shot down. I mean, there's a possibility.
So cynical.
I'm just saying. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. No. That was pretty much the gist. So,
I think that there are those, particularly the Democratic side of the state capitol, that say it just, you know, there's something rotten in Denmark.
That's the assertion being made. Yes.
And I know when I worked in the state capitol, when my boss was the Senate Majority Leader, I was the Communication Director, Deputy Chief of Staff. I worked extensively with LTSB. The great folks, by the way, that worked very hard, do a great job. I will also tell you that the Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker of the Assembly, they control that office. It is not overseen by the governor. It is the Legislative Technology Bureau. And, you know, in all my years working in government, I always took it as a privilege, my job. I can only think twice of two instances in my entire years of in government where I kind of threw my position or my weight around. One, when I worked for a congressman to get a dike over in Portage. And the other one was when I worked for the Senate Majority Leader. And I forget what the issue was, but basically, we were trying. It was 2005, 2006, so it was on the cusp of the internet and everything taking off. And I think that my boss wanted to make sure that both Democrats and Republicans had equal access to make sure they could live stream committee meetings. And things were kind of slowing down. Well, I went into this meeting, and I was kind of a jerk, to be honest. And I threw my weight around, and I said, "Look, the majority leader wants this done." And by God, in about 2 weeks, it got done. And my point is that it seems odd to me, as someone who worked very closely with the LTSB at the state capitol, that something like this would happen without the consent or involvement of the leadership of the legislature. Is that too cynical?
Perhaps I, as a journalist, would not connect those dots so clearly without more information.
Correct. And I want to make sure a fine line. Terry is a fine journalist. He comes from the journalistic side of civic media. I'm just a schmuck who has a talk show. So I'm looking at things and trying to prod things. But I think the facts you have given us, Terry, are very important. And the facts are that there certainly was an issue here where that was and is an issue in court. Where the Wausau Pilot Review is being taken to court. True?
There is a larger issue here, yes. I think of small independent news organizations, which are becoming more and more important now, especially in smaller, mid-sized and smaller communities, where, you know, the for-profit journalism industry has been scaling back. These independent news sources are becoming more and more important, and we work in cooperation with quite a few of them around Wisconsin, and they are doing incredible work. And, you know, we need the Fourth Estate keeping an eye on our public officials. It's why this whole industry exists in the first place, the only profession mentioned in the founding documents of the country. So, and there is this phenomenon going on. I'm not necessarily speaking to this incident, but these small news organizations are under assault on a lot of fronts. We saw the situation, I believe it was in Missouri, with the police raid on the newspaper down there.
We talked about that, yeah, this show, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So
where they came in with this kind of weird judge, gave out this warrant, what a lot of people said she didn't have the right to, and because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the law says that police or investigators could go into a place of journalistic, an office integrity, and confiscate certain items that they feel are involved in a criminal case. They can't just have a raid and take everything.
Right. And the thing is that the decisions that spark these actions aren't necessarily born of any a quest to get some sort of justice out of a situation. It's designed so that either the news organizations will be intimidated or run up, you know, unsustainable legal bills and have to go out of business. It's there's a lot of harassment and intimidation going on.
I want to be clear to our audience, because I admire you, Terry. You're somebody who really knows the history of journalism. You know what it means to be a journalist. You've been working as a journalist in the state for years, for decades. You also teach it at Madison College as well. And you know the history of this. And to me, aside from the specifics of this case, this is disturbing to me as someone who wants a free press.
We haven't seen this kind of thing in an awfully long time. This is not necessarily unprecedented. There have been peaks and valleys in history of how the public sector and then the press cooperate and they're always adversarial.
Right.
But this sort of thing hasn't happened in a long time to this extent.
And we've seen this now in Tennessee too, over the last couple of weeks, where journalists have been thrown out of public spaces because the legislature down there, it's just a fact, controlled by Republicans, don't seemingly want the press to find out or to see what's going on.
And we've seen a lot of intimidation and harassment of journalists who are trying to cover, the demonstrations of a couple of years ago, the Black Lives Matter protests, mm-hmm. and some of the situations that go on, some of the violence, some could argue in some cases, were actually directed at journalists who were mm-hmm. there to try to cover what was happening.
Yeah, I think it's a dangerous precedent. And again, it speaks to, we've talked about it on this show before, our colleague Matt Flynn says it on his show, Matt Flynn Direct, which will follow our show at 3 o'clock here. Fascism creeps in on little cat's feet, and authoritarianism does too. And this, and we have Trigvi Olsen on our show from the Lincoln Project on Wednesdays, who spent a lot of time in Europe and knows authoritarianism. This is a key tenet, and I'm not going to make direct assertions that the legislators of the Capitol, but what this example potentially is an exact example of how authoritarianism starts. Tamp down the press.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the first things that authoritarian regimes go after. They either co-opt the press, shut it down, but get control of the message by any means necessary.
Is it something you teach in your class?
We get into the history of the role of the press in a free society. In fact, we have an entire class called Media and Democracy.
Wow.
Because I think it's especially important here that the objective, independent people have to keep an eye on what's going on.
Yeah. It's important to the entire process, because if people don't know the facts, and we see this, there is left and right media. I don't think anybody can necessarily say there's not. I think I still believe that most media is centrist and trying to do the best they can to put the truth out there.
A lot of ambitious, very intelligent, thoughtful men and women are doing terrific work every day around Wisconsin and around the country, just simply trying to keep people in power honest.
And Terry, agree or disagree, I believe that it's important to have a variety of sources where people get their information, because if we all live in the same kind of bubble and echo chamber, I don't think that's healthy either.
No, it isn't healthy. And I tell people all the time, don't just trust the bubble that you like to hear, mm-hmm. because chances are you're the one who is potentially being manipulated, no matter what your viewpoint is. Fake news was something we're talking about quite a bit a few years ago. And what I would tell people is, don't just be skeptical of the fake news you disagree with. Be even more skeptical of the fake news you agree with. Or really, really check out those stories that just simply feed your confirmation bias.
Never fake news, always accurate. Terry Bell, our news director here at Civic Media. Thanks, Terry. Appreciate you. Stay tuned. On the other side, we have Keegan Kelly from Crack.com. Don't go anywhere. This is the Tom Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief. Hundreds mourn 3 black people shot and killed at a Dollar General store in Jacksonville, Florida. Police calling it a racist attack. The crowd wasn't pleased when Governor DeSantis tried to speak.
Well, thank you for doing this. I want to just say to the Councilwoman.
Tropical storm Idalia churning off the coast of Cuba could come ashore as a hurricane along Florida's west coast. WTSP meteorologist Bobby Deskins.
I don't think the kids will have school Tuesday and Wednesday because we use the schools as evacuation locations, right? So probably not going to have that.
An investigation underway into the cause of a military crash in Australia that killed three U.S. Marines. Network 10's Samara Gardner.
The hospital here has activated its highest emergency level, and that's meant that theatres were cleared out as well as several wards to cope with the wounded.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that some of what we do in government always is political. It has policy impacts. It has political impacts. But if your raison d'etre and your organizing principle is that my guy wins and your guy loses, the entire country suffers. That is not our call to serve. That is not what we raise our hand and say an oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. It also delivers vital emergency information when your community needs it most. A new bill in Congress would ensure AM Radio stays in your car, because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
93.5, The Tap.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the show. It is Friday, August 25th. It is now 2:33. Along with Mr. Aaron Zommer as our producer and engineer. Glad to have you along this last half hour of the show. Here's the, not the pursuing, well, we're going to pursue truth, I guess, but the having fun doing it part. One of our favorite parts of the show. Chance to catch up with unique, wonderful, and interesting people around the country, around the world. And today in that column is Keegan Kelly. He is a cracked staff writer, probably also a crack writer as well, but a comedy writer at crack.com. Our friend Chris Paul is, of course, part of this show, part of that organization as well. Keegan, joining us all the way from L.A., that is Los Angeles, to you and me. Thanks for being with us and welcome.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Great to have you here. We chatted just a minute before we went on the air. Tell folks where you grew up, where you're from, and kind of a little bit how you got into being a writer.
Sure. I'm from Wilmette, Illinois, on Chicago's North Side.
Nice.
The hometown of comedians Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, me. and I was very lucky growing up. I got exposed to comedy comedians in I.O. and Second City and all those great institutions that make up a lot of Chicago's cultural exports. I did that all throughout my teen years, kept doing it through college. And then I was working as a bartender doing improv shows and stand-up sets and whatnot. And I got a call from a friend of mine saying, hey, I just got a job as an editor at cracked.com and I'm not funny. So do you want to come write for me?
How do you get a job at Cracked when you're not funny?
they were a journalist. They were more right. from the media side of things. They're not with the company anymore, so I can make fun of them all I want. But yeah, I started doing freelance work for Cracked for our mutual friend, Chris. Started to escalate. He liked what I wrote. I liked writing it. And now, for about a year now, I've been a full-time comedy writer and a full-time staff member at Cracked.
That's fantastic. So you grew up in Chicago, as you said, or from there originally, and Bill Murray as well. You wrote this great article for Cracked that that Chris sent me, and it's called Caddyshack, the IRL Bushwood Still Hates the Movie. Tell folks a little bit about this, because I think this is fantastic. Caddyshack, just an iconic movie, one of my favorite ones. Tell folks what you wrote and how you came to write it.
Of course, yeah. It's one of my favorite Bill Murray movies, too, which is saying something. Caddyshack, the country club in that movie is based on a real country club in Winnetka, Illinois. Mm-hmm. That's Wilmette's swankier neighbor. And they, Bill and Brian Doyle Murray and Harold Ramis briefly, when they were young during their summers, they'd go up and caddy for them. And the stories they got out of there, you know, of these snooty people, these rich guys pushing them around, talking down to them, began this kind of simmering hatred that turned into mockery, that turned into Caddyshack. I had a few friends growing up, one who was featured in the article that I wrote, who I interviewed about his experience, who caddied either one or multiple summers there. And the stories I got out of there were pretty great in terms of the current club's relationship to the movie, knowing full well that they are the ones who are being made fun of, you know, with the judge and with all these characters. Yeah. There is a real remaining animosity, at least as of about 10 years ago, which I believe was the last time the guy who was interviewed in there was a caddy there. Mm. Either the members themselves or the family members who were very specifically mocked in the movie, because a lot of these characters are based on real people who either used to or still frequent this club. And it's funny that these caddies, and they start as young as like 11 or 12 years old.
Really?
These kids. Yeah, they get them real young, hauling around these clubs. And the first day of training, when they're going over ground rules, decorum, the usual stuff that any country club would do, the caddy master gives them a stern look and he says, yes, this is the club from Caddyshack, and no, you're not allowed to talk about it.
Really? They don't even let them talk about it.
No, they gave him a couple anecdotes, I think, to appease everyone's curiosity. Mainly the one that he mentioned is, I forget the character's name, but one of the other caddies, he's taking that real old couple out and they're just hitting the ball everywhere and they don't know what's going on and he's trying to wrangle them. And the caddy master is like, yeah, those are real people and they're kids. Will chew you out if you say a word about Caddyshack.
See, yeah. This, I had no idea. I mean, I've loved the movie, you know, since I was young. I had no idea that this was based off of, I mean, I thought it was kind of a compilation of people's experiences. I had no idea it was based on an actual club with, you know, actual people, which makes me love the movie, if I could, even more.
Oh yeah, I mean all comedy, all great comedy comes from truth,
right?
And yeah, I mean their experiences, And you read interviews with these guys afterwards, especially Harold Ramis, like the disdain that they had for their former masters down in Indian Hill. You know, it's palpable, and it stayed with them.
But what do you think they would be like? Chill about it. I mean, just kind of like a little self-deprecating humor and like make a big deal about it. Like, you know, have people come and like put a marker up, you know, this is the club based, you know, from Caddyshack, but instead they got to be all tight about it and, you know, take themselves apparently way too seriously.
I think that once we get to the grandkids taking over, the grandkids of the people featured, that's when we'll start to get, you know, maybe a placard, you know, maybe they'll take a picture with Bill Murray at some point. You know, hopefully. But yeah, I these aren't people who have senses of humor about themselves. You know, the North Shore aristocracy.
Right. Yeah. Has Murray been able to go back there or like actually golf there? Do you know?
I don't know if he's golfed there. He did, or at least he's about to open up one of his and his brother's restaurant chains is going to be, I think 5 or 6 blocks down the road from it. And I have to think, you know, he knows the area pretty well. He chose the location for that one. He wanted to be right up next to Indian Hill.
I think that's fantastic. I think that, I mean, what are the chances he might sneak over, you know, across the green or something like that, you know, and just like drive a cart over there and just muck around.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's a big golfer. I got to think at some point. Yeah. It's crossed his mind.
That had to be a lot of fun to write the article just because, I mean, you know, kind of based around your home area.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that growing up, I did kind of, it gave my hometown and the surrounding area a kind of magical quality that, especially, you know, a lot of John Hughes movies were either shot in or based on, you know, these towns. You know, you go on the Wikipedia page for any of these towns and you see all these comedians, all these, you know, titans.
Right.
And it did give me this kind of reverence for what came before me, and a really nice relationship with my town's cultural history.
You said something earlier. You said something earlier that I think is really, really true and really cool. That all great comedy is based on truth. When you're as a comedy writer, when you're looking for something to write about, I mean, how do you start? Do you go through and try to find actual news stories and say, well, how can I, you know, make fun of this or what can I get out of this? What was your process?
That's how it starts. I guess my job specifically on the Cracked writing staff, I'm the comedy blogger, which is I'm the comedy beat writer. I'm looking for stories about comedy. I'm looking for, you know, little opinion pieces we can make, little trivia things that maybe people don't know about. So I have this big trawl. I have, you know, about a dozen different web pages open, all these different sites where I kind of aggregate this information on a daily basis. And I'm looking for names that, you know, I'm interested in, that our readers are interested in, typically, you know, Seinfeld, The Simpsons, stuff, you know, stuff that a lot of people know, a lot of people have that connection to. And if there's, you know, whether it's an interview or someone does a podcast, whatever it is, I go through, I try to get the juicy little tidbits, the anecdotes that we can kind of like flesh out this person or this property. You know, bet you didn't know this about Ghostbusters or The Office, you know, this disaster almost happened. And just kind of like build out the world of these comedians and these comedy shows that people love with, you know, more detail.
We've talked to other people in entertainment before. I'm interested in your take, your perspective, because everybody has a unique story, right? But I think those of us who are still in Wisconsin and we talk to people in LA and they're comedy writers or they're actors or producers, whatever. And it's very glamorous, right? When we think about this back here in Wisconsin. Is it it's just funny and hilarity and glamorous as those of us in the Midwest might think, or is it much more serious and just kind of nose to the grindstone as you go about this every day in the life, quote unquote, of a comedy writer?
I think I'm not the best person to answer that question because I think I have the most boring job you could accurately describe as full-time comedy writer. It's a lot of
how still how is it boring? Internet.
I write 4 posts a day,
right.
Which, you know, it's a pretty high volume, but it's a lot of like digging through, you know, interviews from 2008 or podcasts. Like it's a lot of, I guess just kind of, I'm panning for gold for a lot of this. Most of what I read on a daily basis is so uninteresting. What Steve Carell had for lunch that day, like no one cares about that.
Right.
So it's really getting this big pile of information and news and content and really dissecting it down and getting to the needle in that haystack. But I go through a lot of boring stuff to get there.
I'm sure
the writing.
Good.
The writing part itself is exciting and fun. And, you know, that's the stuff I like. And I try to get my jokes in there. And, that's what I really love about this job, but there's not a ton of glamour in it, I would say.
I think the painting for gold analogy or metaphor, I think that's fantastic because like you say, I mean, whether it's crack.com or whether it's Colbert or whoever, whether it was Conan before that, there's just so much in a writing room that, I mean, it's hard, kind of aggravating work and a lot of stuff, what we used to say, crumpled up on a piece of paper and throw it on the floor of the trash can. Now it's just hit delete probably on a computer. Look, I'm an analog guy living in a digital world. I know that. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff that just never gets used. And to your point, it's just kind of mundane and you're just kind of like, well, how the hell am I going to find something I think is going to land?
Yeah, it is a lot of that. And that's the stuff that people don't see, whether it's web content or TV shows. The elbow grease doesn't really show up on the final product, but it's an important part of the process in any writer's room. That's the stuff that's really where writers are made. Our editor-in-chief has a great line where he's like, you know, what defines you as a writer isn't the lightning bolt idea that hits you in your prime and becomes your best work. It's what you churn out on a Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. when you feel like you got nothing else in the tank. Right. Like that's what really defines the work is what can you do when it feels like the gears aren't moving?
That's good. Because, I mean, it's creativity. Why? I've never written comedy. I used to do political writing and press releases and things like that for my bosses. And, you know, they'd say, well, you know, just sit down and write it. You know, and it's like, well, sometimes it doesn't just come to you. You got to think for a while. And I don't think people that write or people who don't write don't appreciate that it's not an on-off switch right away. There's a process to it.
Oh, yeah. It's a practice. It's a daily routine and it takes work and effort and pushing through the block.
Have you found the longer you've been at it, the easier it comes to you or the easier it gets, or is it a struggle every week?
I'd say that the product gets better the longer I've been at it. The work itself has been the same.
Interesting. We're going to come back after the break, talk more with Keegan Kelly. He is the beat writer, comedy beat writer at crack.com. This one, our friend here at Civic Media, Dr. Lyerly, might be interested in. In Japan, the start of a woman's period is called the arrival of Matthew Perry. We'll ask Keegan on the other side and explain. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny today with a high around 82. Slight chance of an afternoon storm. Scattered storms tonight, partly cloudy, low near 60. Sunshine for tomorrow and a high near 77. Clear skies 53 on Tuesday night. Sunny 79 for Wednesday.
It's 57 at our studios.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Welcome back to the Tom Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock at the top of the hour. Network news followed by weather, and then our friend and colleague, Matt Flynn. Of Matt Flynn Direct will be in. Always a great program. Going to learn something. Probably going to chuckle and come away a better person for it. Great callers. Great program. Great host. Matt Flynn Direct coming up immediately after us. Great guest this half hour. Keegan Kelly, comedy beat writer at Cracked.com. Our friends at Cracked.com. Of course, Chris Pauls, who's a part of this show as a producer and also on the staff, one of the great people at Cracked.com as well, and has linked us up here with Keegan Kelly. Keegan, really appreciate it. But during the break, I asked you, because we here at Civic Media are mostly together, at least our core Madison team now, we're spread across the state, but as a writer at Cracked.com, are you guys still remote, or are you in one big place? And if you are remote, how does that affect the writing process?
We are mostly remote. We have an office in New York where a lot of our writers and editors are located. Mm-hmm. But CP and I, obviously, you know, we don't make that daily commute. We're doing it from home. And it is an adjustment to this new way of doing things. But I think that our editor-in-chief, Josh, has done a really good job. Every morning we have these meetings that go off the rails within about 30 seconds of Josh opening his mouth, where it's just a lot of bouncing off of each other and just kind of setting the culture and the tone. And then we go over the pieces and we riff on it and people get their jokes in and that makes it into other people's pieces. We've done a really good job of adjusting to the making this communal collaborative process work remote.
That's cool. That's awesome. One of the great stories with so many things, people can go to Cracked.com and look up your work. Just look under Keegan Kelly. His last name is K-E-L-L-Y, Keegan Kelly. This one caught my eye. As I said, we have Dr. Lyerly, who is a great gynecologist, OBGYN. She appears once a week on our friend Kristen Bry's show, As Goes Wisconsin. And then she also is on our friend Pat Kreitlow's show, Up North News, a couple times a week as well. Great person, great doctor, always gives us good advice. I'd love to get her take on this story. The headline is, in Japan, the start of a woman's period is called, quote, the arrival of Matthew Perry. Unquote. Matthew Perry, of course, played Chandler Bing on the old show Friends. What the heck is this story, Keegan?
This is one of those. So I mentioned earlier, I kind of have this web trawl where I have a lot of different buzzwords that all pop up in my feed. Mm. And Friends is a big one. Our readers really love that show.
And it's making a comeback, right? With younger kids, like the Gen Zers are watching it now, too.
Oh, yeah. Seinfeld, too. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You know, these people weren't alive for these shows' runs, right. Really connecting to it. But this one, I saw this article that was like, words for period from around the world. And I was like, what does this have to do with anything? And I scrolled down and saw at the bottom, yeah, a saying in Japan is to call the first day of menses the arrival of Matthew Perry. Now, I'm going to spoil the ending for you here. Right. I'm sorry. I don't want to lead anyone on.
No, go ahead.
It's not that Matthew Perry.
Oh, it's not that Matthew Perry.
Yeah, tragically, it's a Commodore Matthew Perry of the U.S. Navy in the mid-1800s. Led the Perry Expedition, which ended, I forget the period, but yeah. Japan had to open up their country for international trade. It was this big disruptive event that was, you know, had all these ramifications. So they named this big, they named periods after this big, disruptive, horrible thing that happened.
Because for young women, young girls and going into womanhood, it is terribly disruptive and a critical time of their development in life. I mean, I thank God that I'm a male and don't have to go through that. But for girls, it's a huge deal. And so I guess in the Japanese culture, you can see where they choose this term, which is a very large, disruptive time in someone's life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's completely understandable when you read about this thing on Wikipedia, which I had to do when I was writing this article because I'd never heard of any of it. Right. You can see the connection. I think the line from the linguist who assembled this list was she also didn't know about this Perry expedition before she started writing it. Okay. And she said, this event was extremely disruptive to Japanese society and caused a huge shift in its history. I'm starting to understand the metaphor now.
Right? Right?
Yeah.
I wonder if Matthew Perry from Friends, I wonder, I mean, because the people in Japan, obviously, they get Friends over there, a big show over there as well.
Yeah, that's, I do wonder if he's familiar with the phrase. if we ever get him to do an interview in Cracked, I promise you I'm going to get that question in.
Hey, have you ever had some celebrities or people you admire that you were able to get an interview with?
I have not been able to. Mm. That's handled by a different desk. I'm still a rookie writer.
Oh,
you know, you've got to work your way up to the A-listers.
Well, come on. I've read some of your stuff here. It looks like it's very fine writing indeed. But other subjects that come more naturally to you, that you enjoy writing about or that you find humorous?
I would say I enjoy stories related to a lot of the stuff that I like. Mm. I like, you know, I love Seinfeld. I love The Simpsons. I love the sitcom Community. I love all the stuff that I grew up with. So if there's anything related to that, and you'll see it a lot, you know, if you scroll down in my article list,
sure.
That's the kind of stuff that I gravitate towards because I always want to learn more about these things and how they were made and the ins and outs. So if I find something new, I'm going to share it.
Well, that's fantastic. It's really great stuff. And how long have you been at Cracked?
I've been here 2 years, first year as a freelancer, and then past year full time.
That's great. That's great. Well, very talented guy. It's a great website. It's called cracked.com. The writer is Keegan, K-E-E-G-A-N, Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. Just go to cracked.com and look for Keegan Kelly, and you'll find all kinds. We had things here about Anchorman as well we didn't get to, and Elon Musk as well.
We love him.
Elon Musk, the comedy gold that keeps on giving.
Oh, yeah, it's endless. God, there's so many jokes.
are you going with X or are you still a Twitter person?
It depends what fits the joke better.
Right? Like, I'm not giving
it
in.
I refuse
to call it X. I will die with the blue bird and Twitter.
Yeah, because, I like the bird.
Right? I mean, what are you supposed to say?
Yeah.
Well, I X'd it out something today rather than tweeted something out.
I mean, personally, I will call it X whenever Elon Musk is forced to close it down or sell it so I can call it his X.
That's pretty good, Mr. Zombers. That's pretty good. A quick joke. Keegan Kelly from cracked.com. Keegan, thank you so much for taking your time on a Friday. Really, really appreciate it. All right, very good.
Keegan, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Keegan Kelly live from Los Angeles. Also, thanks to Terry Bell, our news director here at Civic Media. Thank you to Mr. Zomers as well. And, of course, most of all, thank you for listening. We'll be back on Monday. Stay tuned now for Matt Flynn. Keep banging your drum.
The kids are heading back to class. But when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.